The JSE has hit another all-time high. So too has the NASDAQ and the S&P 500. All of this is happening while Donald Trump has imposed tariffs on U.S. trading partners, which could result in higher inflation. That hasn't happened yet, but there appears little attempt globally to balance the books and bring government spending under control. It's a messy scene with lots of moving parts. To help us make sense of all of this, we're joined once again by Adrian Pask, Chief Investment Officer at PSG Wealth. Hi, Adrian. Thanks again for joining us. What do you make of all of this? What are the major areas of concern impacting global markets in your view?
Hi, Kieran, and also hello to everybody listening in. It's good to be here. I think for us, there's so much happening at the moment. So, you know, you always try to distinguish the really important things from the noise. And all of it is important, but what typically helps for us in a research environment is to look at it and try and bucket the broader themes into different areas in terms of what can really drive outcomes over the longer term. So even if you look at something like tariffs, for example, although it's quite important, we think it's part of a cyclical thing. It's not going to be something that's going to last forever. If we go back to Trump's first administration, there were similar things taking place. And then when his term ended and Biden stepped in, a lot of those things were reversed. And then now we're back there. So there's definitely a cyclical pattern. But then there's other things that we think are maybe in part also cyclical, but the cycles seem to be a bit longer and more impactful and carry more risk. And the way I look at it is broadly three things. The first would be U.S. fiscal strategy, and I think that's really important. And why is this is the one thing that really drives three really important components in the financial system. The dollar, U.S. bonds, which affects all other bonds, and gold. Because if you look at the U.S. fiscal strategy, whether they can continue with their deficits and expand on their debt will ultimately have a meaningful impact on all three of those things and in turn other asset classes. The other thing that might derail us would be the technology capex cycle. And I think obviously there's a lot being written and said about where tech stocks or Mag 7 stocks, all these companies are from a valuation perspective. But I think for me, more concerningly, although the valuation argument is valid, what we notice from a technology capex cycle, so what they are currently spending on capital projects, have fundamentally transformed the nature of these businesses. And these things will have a significant impact on how they report going forward and what the results will be on free cash flow versus headline earnings. And that's where the debate gets a bit more complex, but we can delve into that in a minute if you want. And then the last thing is if there was a crisis going to transpire out of somewhere, it's going to be out of what we see out of investor behavior at the moment. And this comes back to some of the things that we've discussed before in terms of a lot of capital out there, reasonably loose financial conditions, a lot of money in circulation, asset prices are up. Everybody thinks that it's quite easy to invest and find the right stocks because things are just going in one direction. Lots of speculative products being launched. And these are all signs of excess, and it's not encouraging the right investor behavior, and it's creating pockets in the market that might introduce other risks. We've sort of touched on private equity before, and private equity is not necessarily a bad thing, but there are definitely some areas that we need to take note of in terms of why are clients going there, and do they fully understand the potential risks out of that environment? And what could a broader unwind look like if we are to find some blow-ups in that space? And I don't think people have generally applied their mind sufficiently to those things. So those would be my three broader areas that I think needs more exploring, both by investment professionals, but also the typical man on the street that's more distracted by the day-to-day headlines of Trump tweets, etc. These are three really big things that I think If there is a crisis coming or a bump coming, which is inevitable, I think it's very likely that's going to come out of one of these three areas.
And if you were to rank those three in area of importance, which of those would be the biggest risk to your portfolio?
Yeah, I mean, U.S. fiscal strategy is a concern, but it's been such a long theme. They've been in deficits for decades, and things just continue on that road. So who knows how long it can continue? It seems like the bond market and the gold market and the dollar is starting to wake up to the realities of this is not sustainable. So the continuous debate is, but it's the reserve currency of the world. So what's the problem? We've got blank checks effectively. And the reality is it just doesn't work like that. And we can see some of that having an impact now. We see higher bond yields and we see higher gold prices and we see a weaker dollar. And those are all very direct outcomes from U.S. fiscal strategy and the concerns around that. But that being said, I wouldn't put that as over the short to medium term my primary concern. I think what we see in the technology capex cycle, it's something that could come reasonably soon because my view is that I think on terms of technology capex, it really is peaking at the moment. I mean, if we look at some of the capex that's being spent by these Mag 7 companies, it's completely off the charts if you were to go back in time to see how the spending compared a few years back. I mean, to give you an example, in 2014, total capex for the Mag 7, so what they spent on things like data storage centers and those kind of things, was $23 billion for them combined. Meta has now recently come out saying that they will spend $65 billion just next year. So if you look at what is being forecast as being spent next year is around $300 billion that they're going to spend on capex. But if you look at profits out of the Mag 7 at the moment, it's around 600. So it's going to create a significant headwind. And I think at the risk of making things a little bit more complicated, but the accounting year is really important. So typically what happens with CapEx is you spend money off the balance sheet into these capital projects. You buy new data centers or you spend money on chips or whatever you're doing. But then you depreciate or amortize that expense over time. So typically the process would be something along the lines of I'm buying a new chip from NVIDIA, I'm spending X billion on these chips, but I don't have to expense it in my income statement. I can take it off my balance sheet and depreciate the cost over a period of 5 years. So slowly but surely, you can release that. And so it doesn't really impact your headline earnings, it impacts your free cash flow. But if you take on too much capex, then you run into a problem where you've got to run multiple tranches of depreciation for the various elements of capex that you incurred every year. And that starts to build up materially into a depreciation cost. That it becomes a big headwind for headline earnings in future years. So you've got to be pretty sure that whatever you spend on that new infrastructure, you're going to get commensurate payment back or growth back out of it. And if you're spending to the extent that these guys are spending at the moment, they're going to have to make substantial profits to offset the associated depreciation cost. And in my opinion, I think they're starting to stack the odds against themselves. But there's a reason why this is happening. It's almost like they have no choice. If you don't spend, you're going to be left behind and your fate is sealed in any event. Yet the one who spends the most will likely succeed. But that's a dangerous game to play because inevitably some of these could fail and some of these will overallocate out of fear. So there's a complicated dynamic at play. And I think what we shouldn't miss in this is that the whole argument for these businesses at the start of 2014 was they're not spending on capital. They're capital-light businesses. They've got fantastic operating margins. They use network effects and subscription services and other things to be quite profitable. Now, all of a sudden, these are very capital-heavy businesses. And over time, that erodes margins. And that's the part that worries me. So I think the concerns around tech valuations are valid, but largely because of what we see in the CapEx cycle at the moment. It is very elevated levels of capital being built out. And it's not the first time we've seen this, actually. If you cast your mind back to the dot-com bubble, we saw similar things happening. Cisco was the largest company in the world at that time, and it was incurring similar CapEx, and it ran into similar issues in due course. So we've got to be very careful that these guys don't run into similar problems. It doesn't make them bad businesses, but the business models are fundamentally changing. If you look at the financial statements, you can see these businesses are in a completely different space to where they were 10 years ago. And then on the last one, in terms of speculation, I think that invites all sorts of other things to creep in terms of speculative behavior. So, you know, we might see something in the private equity space where we're seeing some of the larger endowments around the world trying to exit these private equity investments, and it could have a significant impact in liquidity, which might lead to something. For me, to get back to your question in terms of how I would rank these, I would think it's quite tight between the speculation and what we see in the CapEx cycle. I think both of those could be imminent, and the one could actually cause the other. If we see financial distress in the tech stocks, we might see more distress in the private equity, or vice versa. So there's a chance that those might coincide. And then more broadly, longer term, unless the US can find a way to turn things around, they're going to run into some debt problems. And we can already see that the market is agreeing with that view in terms of where the bond prices, gold prices, and dollar have been moving towards.
Yeah, it does begin to take on a little bit of the color of the dot-com boom that we saw 25 years ago, as you mentioned. But if you look outside sectors, technology sectors that we've spoken about, where do you see AI having the biggest impact? Is it pharmaceuticals? Is it in engineering? Or is it across the board?
I think it's across the board. But what's interesting to me is that, you know, if you speak to the experts around this, they seem to think healthcare is the one area that could really materially benefit from AI spending. Yet it's the one sector that really did not benefit from the AI sentiment change. I mean, that area of the market has been a laggard. So that's an interesting one. And if you look at what most of these companies outside of the Mag 7 say that they will likely spend on AI, it's about 3% of revenues. So will that be sufficient to drive revenues going forward, given the amount of CapEx that we're currently being spent? That's not enough. So we will have to see whether there is another race developing in terms of the various other sectors that feel compelled to invest in AI so that they can stay ahead. But I think, I mean, it feels to me exactly like the internet situation is, you know, people invested in internet companies initially and dot-com companies, but the beneficiaries, if you think about it, also translated into especially online retailers. For example, those were beneficiaries because the infrastructure of the internet enabled businesses or consumers to shop online. So you've got to really think carefully how AI can help. And I think there are various applications around things like logistics, for example, is a big one. Security is another. Even defense, there's arguments being made around how that can improve. But I think for me, it's almost more important to think about which management teams have exhibited good track record for assessing opportunity and risk and have been quite nimble in their approach to adjust their business models proactively to benefit from changing market conditions, whether it be AI or anything else. Because if you've got a good management team that spot these things early, then I think you're in a better position, because it's still very possible that you find an area in the market that will benefit a lot from AI, but the management team is just not in a position where they're open-minded to absorb these new processes and efficiencies into their businesses. I mean, if you think about our local environment, for example, we know what's happened between ShopRite and Pick n Pay, for example, through COVID, and how the two different teams just operated very differently and how that set the two businesses on very different courses into the future in terms of success and profitability. So you've got to be careful in the sense that you don't sort of broadly assume that a specific sector will universally benefit from these changes. I think the management team for me is actually more important.
Finally, Adrian, let's just wrap this up for investors. What is the optimal approach to building wealth, you know, with all these kind of moving parts and all this uncertainty in the market?
Yeah, I think that mostly probably relates to the level of speculation that we see at the moment. I think, especially in US markets, you can see investors are being lured into all sorts of things, investing out of the conventional. And I think often it's being masqueraded as, you know, democratizing investment into sophisticated things. But in reality, many of these products are not really suitable for a financial plan for the average Joe. You know, even where some institutions use it, they use it very sparingly. And in some cases, as I've mentioned, they're trying to exit some of these things because risks are starting to rise. So I think when it comes to, as an individual, trying to sort of take all of these considerations or things into consideration and managing for it, I think it's very important to be clear on what you want to achieve with your capital and your savings, because it is very easy to be lured into something that has a promise of higher returns but hasn't been tested in a previous market cycle or has an element of uncertainty attached to it. So in spite of all these new things being on the market at the moment, I think it's actually a really good time to focus on the more conventional things that have stood the test of time. Things like just conventional equities. People know how they work. They're fairly transparent. If you have a disciplined process, you use the skilled active manager, you're careful not to overpay, and you think about when and how you interact with your investment in terms of being disciplined around this investment policy. Those things, if you've got that in place, I think you're fine. So I think to summarize, have a clear plan of where you want to go. Identify what your true risk appetite is and use things that are reliable and have been tested throughout time to ensure that you're not lured into any speculative areas or overpay for things that haven't demonstrated their true worth.
Sound advice there from Adrian Pask, Chief Investment Officer at PSG Wealth. Thanks very much once again, Adrian, for joining us.
Thanks, Kieran. It's been good to chat to you, and thanks to everybody who listened in. I hope you found it of use.